evening, everybody, and welcome to the Village Celebration Radio Show. I'm Vicki Newton. Thank you so much for joining us. Sandra Bland, we first talked about the 28-year-old last week, and since then, she has been one of the biggest news headlines. So what happened between the time she was arrested by a Texas state trooper and the time she was found hanging in her jail cell? We've seen the video, we've seen her mugshot, and we've seen the protesters. Few believe the authorities when they say Miss Bland committed suicide with a plastic bag. Instead, her name is being added to a growing list, and it is growing, of African-American women who have died in police custody. Just earlier today in Los Angeles, a judge sentenced a white police officer, a female police officer, to 36 months in jail for assaulting Alicia Thomas while Thomas was in custody. It was all caught on video by a police cruiser camera. The recording captured Ms. Thomas asking for an ambulance after the female officer jabbed her. She lost consciousness and she later died. She was a mother. And so tonight we're focusing on black women, our sisters, who died in the custody of police. Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw is a law professor at Columbia Law University in New York City, and she has written extensively about the mistreatment of African-American women at the hands of the police. Dr. Crenshaw, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What has taken so long for our community to focus on the treatment of African-American women as opposed to just the men?
Well, I think it's a matter of the frame that we've been using to think about this problem, and the fact that for most of the time that we've thought about police violence, we've thought about it through the lens of lynching, and our tendency is to think about lynching and police misconduct as something that reflects an effort to control and punish black men. It's about masculinity. And as a consequence, the various ways that black women have both been masculinized, and so they're also subject to police violence, and then the other ways that they are subject to police violence as blacks who are women just hasn't really been an available way of thinking about racism in general and police violence in particular. So it's really a matter of broadening our lens so we can see how black women are particularly vulnerable to police violence as blacks who are women.
We have watched the video, of course, of Sandra Bland and that officer in Texas. We've seen the video of the teenage girl handled aggressively by the officer in McKinney, Texas, at the pool party. And then there are the numerous incidents involving black women and police that we've not seen. What is happening?
Well, they're incidents we've not seen, and their names we don't know, which is why we called for the hashtag Say Her Name and followed it up with a report that would provide our community and those who care about racial justice with the names to say. So many of the cases that we talk about in the report are cases where black women have been killed when their families have called the police for help. There's Tanisha Anderson and Michelle Casso, both women who had mental health challenges, and police were called, and the police ended up trying to control the situation. And then through their over-aggressiveness in trying to take control, they ended up killing these women. In the Michelle Casso case in particular, the police busted through her door to apprehend her, to take her to a mental health appointment, and said that the look on her face gave him the impression that she was going to use the hammer she was holding to harm him. So he shot her through the heart. Mm. So what we have is cases where black women are made into superhumans or seen as less than human and are framed as being in need of this kind of control. And many times that kind of control is lethal. It's a bit of what we saw with the videotape of Sandra Bland, how the police person there just went from responding negatively to her expression of displeasure about what's happening to immediately turning into a punitive situation. This is where a woman's blackness makes her subject to this kind of discipline, and her womanness does not save her in any way from the violence and discipline that many times black bodies engender.
You say her womanness are what is that supported by? What belief system is it that separates black women from femininity?
Yeah. Well, we only have to think about our history. Black women were brought here basically as laborers, as forced laborers, and in addition to that, as bodies that produced wealth. One cannot hold black women in that capacity and at the same time see them, you know, as worth protecting and valuing and respecting. So part of our long history in this country has been being treated somehow less than even the patriarchal views of womanhood, and that's a whole nother issue right there. So it puts us in the position of being subject in some ways to some of the same ways that a man would be treated, and at the same time being treated as a black person who warrants the kind of punishment and intervention that blackness seems to create in people who are in fear of black bodies. So we're subject both as people who are black and women who are non-normative. And those two things come together to make us particularly vulnerable to violence and other forms of abuse and disrespect.
Unfortunately, and what I find particularly distressing, is that it is not limited just to black women. Little black girls are also being mistreated. Another report that you've written, Black Girls Matter, Pushed Out, Overpoliced, and Underprotected, looked at the disparity in the treatment black girls in school experience relative to white girls. Tell us about that report.
Well, we were very concerned that the conversation about the school-to-prison pipeline, zero-tolerance policies, and the long-term consequences to black people and their families and their communities didn't pay enough attention to the risk that black girls were facing. So we decided to look behind some statistics that the Department of Education had released that showed across the country black girls were six times more likely to suffer from suspension and other disciplinary actions than their same gender peers, namely white girls. What was even more astonishing about that, given how much of the conversation has just been about boys, is that that level racial burden, the racial disparity between black girls and white girls, is actually greater than the disparity between black boys and white boys. In other words, if this is a problem of race discrimination, not only do girls, black girls, suffer it, but they actually have a greater racial burden relative to other girls. So we wanted to find out what was behind that. We looked in New York and we looked in Boston. And there we found black girls were 10 times and 11 times more likely to be subject to suspension than white girls. And when it comes to expulsion, we couldn't even calculate the number because there were no white girls who were expelled from New York City schools, according to their own data, in the year that we looked at, whereas 80% of the girls who were expelled were black. So we see in the suspension story the same kind of punishment and punitive responses to black girlhood. Black girls are seen as out of control, loud, rude, with an attitude. And this is non-normative for girls, number one, and then you add race to it on top of it, and you have precisely the kind of dual vulnerability to exclusionary and punitive policies that we see playing out with so many black women across the country. So we wanted to draw attention to it so as we advocate for Black Lives Mattering, we know what it is that makes black girls and black women so vulnerable, and hopefully we can include that in our mobilizing and advocacy.
Is it fair to say that your research, at the very least, challenges this notion that black men bear a greater racial burden than black women?
Well, what our research does show is that there are different measures of racial burden. So there's the prevalence issue, like how many in raw numbers are subject to this. And for some of these issues, like police killing, there actually are more men being killed because men are more likely to be killed in the first place. And where there's a racial dimension of it, that would mean more black men. But when we measure it in terms of, is the experience that you're having relative to other people and experience of race discrimination, then the disparity level between black women and white women across all of these suggests that on that measure, black women have a greater racial burden. The overall point is that there are a range of ways that racism plays out between black men and black women, black boys and black girls, and it's important that we have frames that incorporate all of it and not marginalize black women and girls simply because one of the frames on prevalence tells us, well, it's not that great of a problem. It's a huge problem for everyone, and we can't have a system of advocacy that's you know, trickled down racial justice. We're all subject to racism, and we should all be at the center of our advocacy campaigns.
Dr. Kim Crenshaw, with research that is certainly upending and moving forward our discussion about race and the way it impacts African Americans, especially African American women. Thank you so much for joining us and for the work you're doing. It's very enlightening.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll be right back, so stay with us.
Boat is a piece of junk.
Yeah, but they don't make them like this anymore.
Gee, I wonder why.
What?
You know, we could have rented a nice boat or a party barge right here at the park.
Huh? Rent?
Yeah, and your tent is moldy, too.
Moldy? What are you, the boat and tent police?
We could have stayed in one of the park yurts. You know, big, roomy tent already set up right on the lake.
Hmm.
Yeah, DeGray Lake Resort State Park has lots of things for rent.
Instant campsite, eh?
Why not? Or we could have stayed at the park lot. Enjoyed the restaurant, the heated pool.
Do I do anything right?
Well, yeah, you married my sister.
Now I remember why I let you in my boat.
So the next time we and the girls get together here at DeGray Lake Resort, you let me make the plans?
Plan away.
Well, if we ever get back to shore, I will. Online at DeGray.com.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
A quick tip from Hansel's Cookin' Vegan. Rev up your metabolism by increasing protein and fiber intake. Increase your daily activity by walking, running, or dancing. Read labels. Look for items with high fiber, low sodium, carbs, and sugars. Limit fast foods. Self-prepared meals help to limit fat and sodium intake. Combine these tips to avoid excessive weight gain. Get more healthy tips at Hansel's CookinVegan.com. Change your diet to change your life.
My daughter made me this cute bottle with a little water in it. Until I can quit smoking, I can stop flicking cigarette butts and put them in here when I drive. They're litter, plain and simple. This is my way to help keep Arkansas beautiful.
For every ton of paper we recycle, we save 17 trees. I really like trees. Recycling helps keep Arkansas beautiful.
A message from the station.
The Arkansas Broadcasters Association.
And keep Arkansas beautiful.
Good evening again. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Village Celebration Radio Show, and I'm Vicki Newton, delighted to have you with us, as we always are on Thursdays. Tonight, we are talking about Sandra Bland, Alicia Thomas, the African-American women, our sisters who died in police custody. Earlier today in L.A., a female officer, a white female officer, was sentenced to 3 years in prison for assaulting Alicia Thomas, who, as they were trying to move her from the cruiser, repeatedly said, "I can't move, I can't breathe." We've heard that before, haven't we? She died later. She was the mother of one child. Let's go now to the Village Verse, which is one of my favorite segments. And tonight we're joined by Minister Rhonda Aldridge, who is the youth minister at Centennial Christian Church in St. Louis. She recently graduated from Eden Theological Seminary with a Master's of Divinity degree, and she will be ordained in a few weeks on August 4th, so mark your calendars if you're in the St. Louis area. She says, "My willingness to stand with, and in some instances for, God's children in their physical, emotional, and spiritual distress is a reflection of how I intend to advocate for those who are silenced and invisible." She's the mother of two wonderful children. Her son, Terrace, is 23. Her daughter, Deja, is 16. And so please join me in welcoming Minister Rhonda Aldridge.
Good evening.
Good evening. You know, what really struck me as I was reading about you is your commitment to advocating for those who are, and I'm using your words, emotionally and spiritually in distress and physically as well. And so clearly, we as women in our community, a community that's in distress, are experiencing our own type of emotional challenge. How do we deal with that? And if you'll take us to the Word, where can we find some encouragement, Minister Aldridge?
Yes, and so what I would like to say in regards to that is the distress that many of our women, specifically our women of color, have systematically, from the very beginning, been oppressed, dehumanized, devalued, and oftentimes we can find ourselves at the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so this will move us into the village verse this evening, and I will be reading from the Gospel of Luke, and it will come out of chapter 10, verse 25 through 37, and it reads as following. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. When he was attacked by robbers, they stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and he saw the man. He passed by on the other side. So, too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." I have heard this text preached or discussed on numerous occasions in many different settings. Most often, the lesson is centered on the Good Samaritan.
That's very true.
The one least likely to care for the man that was left naked and half dead on that Jericho road. We often reflect on why or how could the priests and the Levites, the religious leaders of the day, when they encountered the man that was robbed, stripped of his clothes, and left half dead, could just pass by to the other side without coming to his assistance in a desperate time of need. But this passage has another challenge that is often overlooked, but resembles the reality of so many women of color today. The women who continue to be marginalized, the women who continue to be oppressed, the women who continue to be sexually exploited, silenced, dehumanized, and killed, now that we see in their homes, in their cars, walking down their neighborhood streets, which unfortunately reminds me of that same Jericho Road, mm-hmm. where they were not only robbed and beaten and left for dead, but actually killed. 7-year-old Ayanna Jones, 22-year-old Rekia Boyd, 48-year-old Yvette Smith, 93-year-old Pearlie Gordon, 26-year-old Tyreka Wilson, 19-year-old Taisha Miller, 92-year-old Katherine Johnson, 22-year-old Gabriella Nevarez, 66-year-old Eleanor Bumpers, 34-year-old Miriam Carey, 23-year-old Chantel Davis, and unfortunately now we add the name to the list of Sandra Bland, mm-hmm. whose life has ended far too soon, mm-hmm. because she too was robbed. She too was beaten. She too was left naked and taken away into custody, half dead, on the Texas Jericho Road.
Mm. As you read those names, Minister Aldridge, I got chills, just because as women, we have suffered for so many generations, and we have suffered silently, and we have borne, I think, a lot of our community's burdens, and we have created this idea of the strong black woman. Strong because there simply is no other way to be.
Yes. And strong in strength, yes, but also strong in support of the entire community.
Absolutely.
And oftentimes we take on the burdens of not just our family, not just our extended family, but every community where we exist.
Mm-hmm.
But then the question becomes, who now cares for us?
Amen.
Who cares for us in our spiritual distress, in our physical distress, in our emotional distress? When we encounter now what once appeared to be victimization by our black men, you know, from the police, now the sirens
sure.
that I hear, it's no longer will my son hear them.
Exactly.
It's what will happen if I get pulled over.
Absolutely.
Because we've seen now that it could also be us. And so we have to continue to support one another, uplift one another, and continue to say our names.
Mm-hmm. And
Amen.
Cast our burdens, as the Bible
and
tells us.
And cast our burdens,
absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
Cast our burdens. What a pleasure to have you join us tonight in the Village. Really appreciate your encouragement, and we are praying for you as you approach your ordination on August 4th. We hope you'll come back and share another word with us someday.
And thank you so much, Ms. Newton, for allowing me to have a segment of your time today as well.
Well, you
Very
have blessed
honored and
us.
Appreciated.
You have blessed the Village, and we appreciate you. Stay with us, everybody. We will be right back.
Hey, Glenn.
Well, you can tell that Chip over there is getting ready for the old family vacation.
Yeah.
He's pulling out the boat, airing the tents, checking gear, getting everything packed.
Yeah, we're about to head out on our vacation, too.
But you're sitting here drinking tea, surveying your domain from that lawn chair.
Yeah, buddy.
So, are you really about to leave on a vacation?
Yep, right here in Arkansas to enjoy our great state parks.
Why aren't you getting your gear together?
Because we rent it in the state parks. Instant vacation. No hassles before we go and none after we get back.
Rent?
Yep, the state parks have ski boats, party barges, fishing boats, kayaks, canoes. They even have RVs and tents already set up, plus the cabins and more.
RVs?
Just go to ArkansasStateParks.com. It's all there.
Instant vacation sounds like a perfect vacation.
Yeah, it will be if you mow my lawn while I'm gone.
Well, sure.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
No, oh, I can't believe that.
Nice.
I hit it perfect.
You're just standing too close to the ball. After you hit it.
Hey, you had one in the rough, two in the trees.
We're keeping score?
Yeah.
Maybe a new course would lower your handicap. Mm. Arkansas State Parks has two golf courses.
Yeah?
We should play them.
Tell me more.
The Gray Lake Resort's golf course is perfect for us. 18 holes overlooking the lake, and the wives will enjoy DeGray's Island Lodge.
Sweet.
Yeah, then we'll play the ridges at Village Creek.
Village Creek State Park has a course?
Yeah, here it's outstanding. 27 holes, Andy Dye design,
wow.
PGA caliber championship layout, and dramatic elevation changes since it's on Crowley's Ridge.
Wow.
And the girls will enjoy the cabins.
How do we get on these courses?
Well, they're in our state parks, so they're public courses.
Yeah.
ArkansasStateParks.com has details and photos.
Let's finish this round and book a tee time.
Oh, yeah.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks.
I remember the moment. I'll never never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
That moment, we arrived on the scene.
The storm had nearly destroyed the area.
This was our own community. Friends, family, people we grew up with, went to school with, we were there to help.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
They made it down to the storm cellar, but the house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had chainsaws going, and we had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Right here, close to home, in my state.
It was one of those life-changing moments where I realized I am making a difference in these people's lives and mine. I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
You can serve part-time and be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard. Aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
Your boat is a piece of junk.
Yeah, but they don't make them like this anymore.
Gee, I wonder why.
What?
You know, we could have rented a nice boat or a party barge right here at the park.
Huh? Rent?
Yeah, and your tent is moldy, too.
Moldy? What are you, the boat and tent police?
We could have stayed in one of the park yurts. You know, big, roomy tent already set up right on the lake.
Mm.
Yeah, DeGray Lake Resort State Park has lots of things for rent.
Instant campsite, eh?
Why not? Or we could have stayed at the park. Park Lodge, enjoyed the restaurant, the heated pool.
Do I do anything right?
Well, yeah, you married my sister.
Now I remember why I let you in my boat.
So the next time we and the girls get together here at DeGray Lake Resort, you let me make the plans?
Plan away.
Well, if we ever get back to shore, I will. Online at DeGray.com.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
We hope you're enjoying tonight's Village Celebration radio show, where we are focusing on African American women. We've heard words tossed about like undervalued, underprotected, pushed out. Rosa Parks, everybody knows Mrs. Parks' name. We all learned about her in American history. We were taught about her at home. During Black History Month, we hear about Rosa Parks. Several years ago, Mrs. Parks' archives became available, her archival collection, and she had thousands of pieces of memorabilia, cards from Dr. King when he traveled. She had the minutes from the NAACP meetings during the boycott in Montgomery. And no one offered to buy her archival collection. I was astonished. We traveled to New York City to visit with the curator of Mrs. Parks' archival collection. It sat there in the warehouse for at least 3 years. And finally, the son of Warren Buffett bought Mrs. Parks' archival collection about 6 months ago. Why did it take so long for an American heroine's archival collection to be purchased? Certainly it was valuable, priceless, telling a key part of the civil rights story. Here is what the curator had to say about Mrs. Parks.
This is one of the most significant bodies of material that has been preserved in our nation's history. And to initially be invited to her home, where these objects were on her walls, in her desk drawers, you had to pinch yourself and say, are we really here? The bottom line when you go through this material is that it reveals a far more complex, far stronger woman than I think anybody has ever imagined. On a personal level, I, like everyone I know, grew up thinking here was this wonderful woman who one day did a very noble and important deed, giving one the belief that she lived for 15 minutes on that bus and that was it. When indeed, you can see through her writings that she had set her mind as early as age 12 to changing the world around her, to ridding it of the oppression her family and friends were living under, to undo the injustices of the world. And she, in a way, was like a volcano who was building and building and building, and finally erupted on that day on the bus. But then, lest it be believed that she sort of fell back into the shadows, never to be heard from in any serious way again, you can see through her writings that the well-known Montgomery bus boycott that changed things monumentally, in many ways were orchestrated by her. Her writings reveal how she's putting down instructions for the people of Montgomery how to comport themselves. You know, you look at objects, and how could you not be inspired by the Presidential Medal of Freedom or the Congressional Gold Medal, the two highest honors you can receive in this nation, or to be sort of equally thrilled by the letters from second graders that show, you know, a love for this woman. And there are certainly charming objects. Her work as a seamstress, her handwritten recipe for Featherlight peanut butter pancakes. But as a body of material, how can you answer the question of what do we believe the most important material to be, hence our favorite, would be her writings, because that's what reveals so much. Here we can see the backside of some of the paper that she's writing upon. And this one is the Youth Council of the NAACP in Montgomery, although this isn't dated because there's nothing written on it. You can just tell approximately when it is by virtue of the fact that there's no area code on the phone number, which is always a sure sign that you're dealing with material from the 1950s or earlier. Lest anyone believe that she had instant access to a Kinko's right on the corner, that wasn't the case. She would grab any piece of paper she could get her hands on, many of which came in the form of mimeographed pages from her local church in Montgomery, or handouts by the local fledgling chapter of the NAACP in that area, and just take them and write on the back sides of them, which show exactly where she was and when she was writing these things. But somehow there was this sense that history was unfolding, and people had the good sense to do just that, to save her things. Mother of the civil rights movement? Absolutely. Someone who gave birth to the movement and then watched and helped it grow. A true mother.
Rosa Parks embodied what so many African American women embody: strength, courage, kindness, compassion, integrity. It's all found in the village, in the women of the village. We'll be right back, so stay with us.
The Joy Network.
You know, honey, when I was a little girl, it was such a treat to spend the night in my backyard. I remember Mom and Dad would make a big tent out of bed sheets.
Cool.
Those campouts with them were such an adventure.
Yeah, I bet.
Our kids need to experience a night in the backyard so they can have memories like that, too.
You are so right. But let's take them to one of our state parks so we can spend the night in Arkansas's big backyard.
Oh, they'll love that.
Well, you always make the plans, so what should we do? Should we go camping or stay in a park cabin or one of the mountain lodges?
Let's decide right now.
Okay.
ArkansasStateParks.com, the state parks website. Wow, look at all our choices.
Yeah, they even have tents or yurts we could rent.
Or an RV.
An RV sounds pretty comfortable to me.
Let's make our plans and surprise the kids. Now they'll have backyard memories too.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
It was a moment.
It was a moment that changed my life.
We looked down from the chopper and saw the whole area was flooded.
At that moment, it really hit me. This is why I joined the Guard.
People had gone up to the rooftops to escape the rising waters.
Talk about intense moments. We had to lower the guys online some 30 feet down.
This is where teamwork and training really paid off.
It took steady nerves and steady hands for the chopper pilots to hover like that.
No question, Guard pilots are the best in the world.
I couldn't believe it. I just saved a life.
What could be better than serving the people of my hometown?
In the National Guard, you serve your community as well as your country while you work or attend college. In return, you gain skills in which you can build a career and receive benefits that can help you pay for college. Learn more about what it means to be a citizen soldier at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard. Aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
Why are we here in an Arkansas state park in winter? It's quiet, cold, it's winter.
I know! Now's when the weather is nice and cool.
I need to keep moving to stay warm.
Yes! Isn't this invigorating? Winter is the best time to hike the trails.
Yeah, and look around. There aren't any leaves on the trees.
I know! Now you can really see the scenery. Isn't this view beautiful?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Look, over there, a bald eagle, an American bald eagle in the wild.
Yeah, speaking of bald, I left my cap back in the cabin. You know, our warm park cabin with the warm fireplace. Let's go back and join our wives at the warm cabin.
Great idea. We'll all go have lunch at the lodge.
Really, what is there to do in a park in winter?
We'll join the park naturalists for a lake cruise, then tonight's music performance, the hayride bird watching, the kayak tour, the star
party. Okay, I give. Maybe there is a lot to do in an Arkansas state park in winter.
Or we could just
chill.
Chill.
For a free guidebook and calendar of events, call 1-888-AT-PARKS or visit ArkansasStateParks.com. Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. Aren't you glad we've got them? Welcome back to the Village Celebration. Glad you're with us on a Thursday night. It is now time for a house call, or a village call, rather, by our village doctor, Dr. Diane Marshall. Dr. Marshall, good evening.
Good evening, Vicki.
How are you today?
I am quite well. I'm on vacation, and so I am really relaxed.
Oh, you're doing really well.
Absolutely.
Doing really well. You have earned it. So let's talk about a report that was released a week or so ago about statins. Can you bring us up to speed on those and tell us exactly what the statins are, although those who are taking them are quite familiar, I'm sure?
Certainly. Statins is a class of medication that we use to help lower cholesterol. And most patients who have other problems, heart disease, may have had a heart attack in the past, those who have had a stroke, those patients with diabetes, who may be taking a statin right now. Some of the more familiar ones are Lipitor, Crestor, Pravacol, Lescol. Those are some of the statins that most patients are familiar with.
You mentioned a number of conditions, diseases that we seem to have a disproportionate number of cases in our community, diabetes, strokes. Talk to us about the connection between statins and lifestyle and diet.
Certainly. Like I said before, statins are used to help lower cholesterol. And why is that important? If you have a family history of heart disease, if you yourself have heart disease, or if you have high blood pressure or diabetes, you are probably at increased risk of getting high cholesterol numbers. Now, why is that important? If your cholesterol is too high, it can cause a buildup in your arteries of plaque. And if that plaque gets too thick that it obstructs the flow of blood, you could have a heart attack or you could have a stroke. So that's why some of these medications are vitally important in some patients. Let me preface that by saying that you should speak with your physician regarding whether or not you should be on a statin, first of all. But they are important medications, and I think some of the studies that you're referring to are the slight increased risk of possibly diabetes in some patients. Whether or not these studies are really valid, I think some of them may be, but I think there needs to be further look into it. Mm-hmm. But we do not want patients to stop taking their statin medications if they're taking it without first discussing the risks and benefits of taking the medicines versus not taking the medications.
Well, they certainly sound far too important, you know, in terms of fighting diabetes and blood pressure to just willy-nilly discontinue them. So like you say, please talk with your doctor. It's the cholesterol that's so important and keeping that under control. And I just might confess that I have had fried catfish two nights running. So I'm not trending well, Dr. Marshall.
Right, right. Well, we do know that cholesterol issues can be, a large part of that can be just your family history.
Mm-hmm.
And so some patients who might be on the best diets might still have an elevated cholesterol level.
See.
Certainly, exercising will help to reduce that. Eating right, yes. Eliminating fried foods. Eliminating the bad fats, the saturated fats in your diet, that will help to lower your cholesterol. And exercise, those are big things that we all can do to help prevent high cholesterol numbers. Now, suppose you're doing all of that and your cholesterol is still high. Well, after, you know, speaking with your physician, if you are at increased risk of having a heart attack or stroke, you might still benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that it just depends on your risk. And we certainly use tools that we can assess your risk and decide whether or not this medication may be beneficial to you.
They sound so important. If you're battling any of the diseases that we mentioned, heart disease, high blood pressure, the possibility of strokes, which are connected to high blood pressure. These days, it seems like we have so much information that we have no excuse for failing to do better eating well and exercise. What do you find with your patients is perhaps the most common explanation for not making the adjustments?
I think you are so right. We are inundated almost too much with information. I mean, you come into my office, I'm going to give you information on cholesterol and lowering your risk. Then you're going to go to the drugstore, you're going to pick up your medications, and then they're going to give you some other information on risks. And then you're going to go home, and you're going to look at the Internet, and then you're going to look at your risk, and then you're going to decide, well, all of the side effects that you have listed are way greater than my risk for getting it, so I'm just not going to take it. So getting back to your question, I think that we all are going to be at risk because of our American diet. And so the things that we can do to help eliminate it, we certainly should, but most of the time my patients are just complaining of time. You know, we work 40 hours plus a week. We have children to take care of. We have other things outside of our own health that we pay more attention to. So it really is a matter of time. I think that patients have got to get to the point where they make themselves a priority so that they can be here for their jobs or be here for their family. You know, you just got to find time in your schedule to get it done.
And here's a question, because we are focused so tonight on black women. Do you find that your female patients use that explanation more often? Well, I'm just so busy taking care of everyone else, Dr. Marshall. There's really no time for me.
Well, certainly they do. And that's probably because we're going to see more female patients than we do male patients.
I see.
You know, females are the first to go to the doctor when they have an issue, but they may neglect taking, it's really good, but they may not take the medicines you're giving them because of their time. You know, it is a struggle to get the men in. And once
they
can get the men in, they'll probably take their medications. But yes, it is a big problem with female patients. Now, we also know that heart disease risk is a little bit higher in men, but that does not mean that women don't have that risk. And when women get to a certain age, particularly after menopause, their risk is about equal to that of a man. So then we're both in that in that same situation when it comes to heart disease risk.
Well, we'll have to talk some more about heart disease. Maybe in the next couple of weeks we can focus on heart disease. Next week we're talking adult immunizations.
Absolutely.
Which I didn't even know we needed. Which I didn't even know
we
needed. All right.
We do, Vicky.
Enjoy the rest of your vacation. Dr. Diane Marshall, our Village Doctor, thank you so much. Don't go away. Coming up, we will hear from Redden Hudson, who is a former police officer. So many are asking, what do I do when I encounter the police? What are my rights and how do I comply? Back in a moment.
Boat is a piece of junk.
Yeah, but they don't make them like this anymore.
Gee, I wonder why.
What?
You know, we could have rented a nice boat or a party barge right here at the park.
Huh? Rent?
Yeah, and your tent is moldy, too.
Moldy? What are you, the boat and tent police?
We could have stayed in one of the park yurts. You know, big, roomy tent already set up right on the lake.
Hmm.
Yeah, DeGray Lake Resort State Park has lots of things for rent.
Instant campsite, eh?
Why not? Or we could have stayed at the park lot. Enjoyed the restaurant, the heated pool.
A
Do I do anything right?
Well, yeah, you married my sister.
Now I remember why I let you in my boat.
So the next time we and the girls get together here at DeGray Lake Resort, you let me make the plans?
Plan away.
Well, if we ever get back to shore, I will. Online at DeGray.com.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
Here's a quick tip from Hansel's Cookin' Vegan. Rev up your metabolism by increasing protein and fiber intake. Increase your daily activity by walking, running, or dancing. Read labels. Look for items with high fiber, low sodium, carbs, and sugars. Limit fast foods. Self-prepared meals help to limit fat and sodium intake. Combine these tips to avoid excessive weight gain. Get more healthy tips at Hansel's CookinVegan.com. Change your diet to change your life.
Here's your chance to really shine and do something great for the whole state. Join the Great Arkansas Cleanup. Volunteers and community organizations will soon be picking up litter along Arkansas's roadways, streams, and shorelines, and in the process, helping the real natural state shine through. Join the Great Arkansas Cleanup. Go to KeepArkansasBeautiful.com to find out how you can help keep Arkansas clean and green. A message from this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and the Keep Arkansas Beautiful Commission.
Welcome back to the Village Celebration. As we mentioned, Redded Hudson has been seen all around the country on CNN, MSNBC, talking about the police culture that is shocking and astonishing African Americans in particular. Redded is a former St. Louis police officer, and he is joining us tonight. I think every time we see something new, Redded, it's as if we are shocked anew. This picture from Chicago, and then the decision in Cleveland where this officer dared jump on the roof and fire more shots. It's outrageous.
Both of those are equally outrageous. In Cleveland, you have a case where Officer Crelo, I believe his name was part of a group of 13 officers that fired a total of 137 shots at two people who were unarmed, weren't firing at them. Officer Brelo fired his last 15 shots after all the other officers had stopped firing completely. He jumped on the hood of the car and then fired 15 more times through the windshield. That is not only excessive force, but it's stupid tactically. If for a moment he believed that, you know, his life was in danger, as he said,
why jump on the hood?
Being fired upon, you don't jump right. I doubt seriously the veracity of that statement. I think that was just an out that he sought and successfully used. The picture in Chicago, I think, is shocking, as you said, but it speaks to a culture that is systemic and we've known about for years. Chicago PD had just written out a settlement, the city of Chicago, with hundreds of people who had been tortured, mostly blacks, who had been tortured by Chicago police into false confessions that earned them convictions and winding up serving time for crimes they didn't commit. I mean, they were shocking people with electricity, suffocating them, beating them. There's a case where one guy, they were apparently simulating the loading of a shotgun and then putting it in his mouth and pulling the trigger repeatedly until he confessed. So I think the country has to come to grips with the fact that, yes, the endeavor of police work and police officers is a noble one. It is something that is about selflessness, risk, sacrifice, courage, and all of those things. But the practice and the act of policing itself, we've seen in police culture too many times departments across the country fall very far short of the ideal when we think about law enforcement in our communities. And a lot of it does have to do with race.
Let me ask you this. What is it like to be a black man in a police department where this type of mentality is pervasive? What's that like daily?
It's a real challenge because, as you know, you spent time in St. Louis. We have, on the one hand, an issue in our communities with violence. and there is a desire on the part of people in our community, and I'm talking about the African-American community, to address the issue of black-on-black violence, particularly relative to some of our younger people. On the other side of that, you have a kind of systemic violence. Institutional racism is real in this country. It is at the foundation of our criminal justice system. If you look at every stage in the criminal justice process, there are severe disparities indicated at every place relative to arrest, sentencing, you name it, the disparity is there. And when you go to an even deeper level and talk about the abuse of authority, when it's exercised against people in poor communities and communities that lack resources, black communities, as a black police officer, you struggle to try to reconcile your role in both of those environments and how you can be an agent of change in both settings. I want the violence in my community to stop, and I want the systemic and institutional racism in the criminal justice system I'm in service to end. And it's a challenge fighting on both fronts because you get resistance all the way around.
Is that why it seems that we do not have large numbers of police officers who are African American? It seems in so many of these communities, when the Justice Department investigates, there is a lack of representation in the police force. Is that why it's just simply too challenging to fight the racism within the department, and then the perception outside of the department that you might not be part of the community or true to the community?
I think that is. I think those things are definitely an aspect of what the challenges are when it comes to recruitment of black candidates for police officer positions, especially given the relationship historically now that police departments have had with urban core communities and predominantly black communities. A lot of young African-American men are just not attracted to that environment because they don't want to be part of what they've seen as an oppressive and discriminatory force that's present in their community. They don't want to join up with that.
Sure.
The remedy for that is, of course, better police work. That is exemplified by respect for the citizens that you serve, respect for the law, respect for the Constitution, and the dignity and humanity of the community that you serve, so that you can build relationships and young men see that there's a real opportunity in being a police officer to serve your community from an empowered position. Mm-hmm. We have a long way to go before that reality is present among us, because there's so much going on right now that it seems to be taking a turn for the worse every time you look up, as you said when you started.
Absolutely. You know, it sounds good, this notion of building relationships and knowing the communities where the police officers serve. It all sounds so wonderful, but we do know that it is virtually impossible to legislate a person's heart. And if the heart has a bent that is founded in prejudice, what do you do with that?
You're absolutely right, Vicki. I've used almost that exact analogy for your listeners who are old enough and perhaps corny enough like myself to remember a movie called The Mask, which starred Jim Carrey. If you remember the plot of that movie, was there was this mask that whoever put the mask on, your character became magnified. If you were a good person and you had a good, kind heart, then now you were just magnanimous and you were trying to save the world. But if you were an evil person, a hateful person, and you put it on, now you're a monster. That badge is the same thing. That's exactly what it does. It brings out the essence and soul of the people who put it on. And so, you know, you hope that the best in us, or the people who want to be in the role of responsibility when it comes to enforcing our laws, particularly where it involves the use of force against your fellow citizens, that you would do that responsibly and as safely as possible. But we've got a long way to go. We have to do better training, but as I think I said on the last time that I talked to you, training is important, but accountability is more important, because training is meaningless if you don't adhere to it, and you're not held responsible or accountable when you don't adhere to it.
And whose job is it to hold the police officers accountable? I suppose what I'm trying to ask is, what is our role as a community? Do we protest nonstop. What do we do to make sure that we are served properly, that we are treated with dignity? What do we do so that that happens and nothing less?
Protests certainly serve the role. Historically, you know, in all of the meaningful movements for civil rights and equal rights in this country, civic protest has played a role. Certainly, the administration and leadership on departments play a key role in determining what kind of culture you have, and also determine the level of responsibility and accountability that is going to exist on that department for officers who violate policy and or the rights of the citizens that they serve. So we need better leadership departmentally, and then we need the nation to come to grips with the fact that, yes, the endeavor, the job itself is noble,
it's admirable,
at times heroic,
yes.
But we cannot attribute those qualities to everyone who has the uniform on, particularly when they violate the rights of the people that they're sworn to serve, brutalize them without cause, unlawfully. We have to be prepared, to hold people accountable and not give up on the idea of law enforcement as worthy and necessary. But at the same time, understand that we have to hold people who do that job accountable when they fall short of what we expect.
Well, here's an encouraging note. I read about a recent study or poll that indicated that more white Americans are beginning to realize or at least acknowledge that these issues that we see in the police department and the interaction that police officers are having with African American men is a microcosm of deteriorating race relations in America. So there is at least the start of an acknowledgement, and maybe from that point we can see some real progress.
And in terms of progress, I read today a number of opinion pieces written in the Washington Post and several other national publications about Sandra Bland, not just African American men, but Sandra Bland. And they said she never should have been arrested, and she certainly should not have died in that jail cell. So we started the night talking about Sandra Bland. We mentioned Alicia Thomas. Is it progress that an LAPD officer, a female officer, will spend 36 months in jail, or at least has been sentenced to 36 months in jail for assaulting Miss Thomas in the back of a police cruiser? It was caught on camera. Is it progress? How will we define progress? Another question that's been raised, what do you do when the police stop you? In my opinion, you do what you need to do to go home that night. We hear police say all the time, I just want to go home at the end of the night. Well, so do I. So do you. It's a question that we're asking in our community. It used to be one that our men used to toss about more frequently, but now it's one we as women are asking. We leave you tonight. We thank you for joining us in The Village with a song that was written by Alicia Keys and performed by Alicia Keys. It's called Superwoman. So many of the sisters in our community wear that label, and justifiably so. I'm Vicki Newton. You've been listening to The Village Celebration Radio Show.
For the better part of me, yeah. I hang my head from sorrow. State of humanity.
What's up?
Wear it on my shoulders.
Yeah.
Gotta find strength in me.
Why's that?
'Cause I am a superwoman. Yes, I
right.
This is for all the mothers fighting.
your spirit with food for your soul. It's Join